The title of the talk is Middle Path, the Art of Maintaining Balance. And so there are many ways that the Buddha talked about balance and the middle way. Right? Obviously, the famous teaching of the Buddha that he gave on his first teaching is, the middle path, the Eightfold Path. Not going towards sensual indulgence, but also not going towards, asceticism. That's one way to look at it. We've only heard that talk a million times, so I won't go there. And then this other way, the Buddha talked about, Ajahn Chah used to talk about the middle way of liking and disliking. And that, most people, we veer towards one or another. When you find someone you like, then it's a beautiful relationship, you're in love, it's a honeymoon. And then 3 months later, something goes wrong, and you veer towards the other way of fault finding, argument finding, and then you divorce this person. So always, always loving and hating. And sometimes in the world, it seems to be a defining thing that people really get into it. No one wants to be kind of calm and steady. They want to really, experience happiness, this lovely, this spike, happiness, and then they go to the other extreme of depression or anger. Yeah, so it's true, a lot of the practice has to be kind of finding the middle way, kind of when things are going well, to be aware, to be grateful, and to feel the happiness of things going your way, of being in a nice situation. But not to get attached to it, not to get worried about it. And when things don't go your way, when things go wrong, you're facing obstacles, to not to get overly depressed or, have a lot of aversion towards the negative things that's happening in your life. Always trying to maintain. Remember, the kind of the core teaching, the Buddha, always keep in mind, is to refrain from doing bad, to do what is good, and to cultivate the mind. So, and it's something that each and every one of us can do, in our life, regardless where we are, whether we're a monk or a nun, whether we're a lay person, whether we're single or married, we always cultivate wholesome states of mind, whatever is happening. Like today, I was sitting in, going to the town, and we got caught in a bit of traffic. So I'm thinking to myself, why am I doing this? There's lots of monks in the city already. Why should I come in and teach and get stuck in traffic? But then, something occurred to me. Like that, it's obviously one is not wholesome. No point in complaining about the traffic. That's not going to change, obviously. And the two, and you can feel it. Aversion, negativity. It's not very kind of, it's suffering. It doesn't feel right. And just a lot of times, just coming here and seeing, on Friday night, you don't have to be here. You can be out running around with all the other ladies and gentlemen in short skirts and tight shirts, going to the pubs or whatever it is that we see lots of people on our way here at the pubs and doing different things. But, at least you have enough faith and devotion in the Buddhist teaching just to come, to listen to a talk, do a bit of meditation and be chanting. So cultivating wholesome states of mind. And it's true. I mean, in the lay world, with the busy schedule, with family and work, or schooling, pressures of exams, a relationship, pressures to do well in school, that you're always constantly balancing as well the different things in your life. And it's good, to kind of address those issues, find skillful means. And just to remember, in terms of balancing the different kind of responsibility you have, always become more sensitive. And that's where peaceful mind, a still mind, Buddha meditation helps to clarify things. If the mind is too distracted, you get confused, distracted, and you don't know, how much to give or how much to kind of save or to take for yourself. Sometimes people, everybody wants to be compassionate, be loving. You want to help the world. You want to make it a better place. But how do we do that, right? It's good, and sometimes it's, to have good intentions of world peace, change, having a positive effect on the environment, and different issues that you want to address and you want to do. But sometimes good intention is not enough. We have to know our own capability. You know, how well, how much energy we can give to others. But also, how to also nourish our own mind, nourish our own heart. You know, and it's kind of a useful thing to remember. You know, unless you yourself are happy, at peace, you cannot make other people happy, no matter how hard you try. So sometimes, you know, kind of the idea that, you know, selfless, to give, to be compassionate at all expense, and to give yourself up to the wealth of others, you know, that has practical consequences. And sometimes that's what you hear in the kind of the health industry, doctors and nurses, who kind of their job is to, you know, help people on a daily basis, to nurse people, to look after them. But after a while, they get this kind of burnout rate. A lot of times, they're, you know, if you're too tired, you know, you can't still the mind, you're depressed, you get angry, then the mind has very low energy, and you can't create those energy by, you know, willpower or just by wishing you have. You have to establish the causes for wholesome states of mind. And that's the thing you keep yourself, you know, kind of focused on. It's a balance between compassion and wisdom. You know, we want to help the world. But also, the most effective way to help the world around you is to be a more peaceful person, to have a more peaceful mind. And then compassion arises naturally. Right? And it's something that you do moment by moment. It's not just an idea that you're going to help people or help the world. But when your mind is peaceful, when you're happy, you'll feel it, you'll know it. That, you know, feeling of empathy, wanting to help, and having the energy and the kind of skillful qualities and the analytic qualities to really back up your intention. If you are distracted, unhappy, depressed, it's very difficult to have a positive effect in the world. And that's sometimes it's good to kind of realize as well, like, you know, you've been around people who are sick, not happy, people who suffer a lot. Are they kind, gentle people? Usually not, because obviously they're consumed by their own suffering. People who's going to divorce, you know, they're not going to be so friendly. But it's normal. So that's why it's something to understand. It's also normal. But and not to blame people. Obviously, you know, people get angry, depressed, or whatever, when things go wrong, when they get sick, and they get, you know, that's fine. But reflect that wisely. So knowing yourself, that you want to have a positive effect on the world, then you look after yourself in the sense that, you know, you want to calm the mind, you want to be a happy person, be a peaceful person. And then once, you know, you have a certain stable base, a foundation of happiness or a sense of well-being, then you'll see that compassion arises naturally, that you have more spaciousness to look around and to be more sensitive to the people around you. Yeah? And that's the thing, we have a saying kind of in monasteries or in meditation centers. People suffer, you know, all their problems right here. They don't see anybody else. They can't sense the needs of other people around them. But people who are happy, you know, they have issues. Of course, everybody has issues until you're fully enlightened. But they know, they put the issues in perspective. It's out here. It's not blocking their whole vision. They can see around them. They can be more sensitive to the needs, you know, and the wants of the people around them, and to do what's the right thing to do, and to know to balance between, you know, your own happiness and the happiness of the people around you. Yeah. And sometimes, it's not always a zero-sum game. Sometimes, you find actually, when you make other people happy, it raises your level of happiness as well, if it's done from right intention. Not as an idea, but it's kind of a spontaneous act of knowing, of clarity, of compassion. Okay, you know, sometimes we are in this together. You know, it's a family, you know, or a friend. You know how it is when, you know, one of your friends in a group is going through a difficult time, it's not unhappy. It's kind of affect the whole group. So, you know, looking after each other sometimes raises the level of the happiness of everybody. Yeah, so it's not like, it's not an intellectual thing, but sometimes it's an emotional thing that you feel. One person in the family suffers, you know, it brings the spirit down. But if the family's getting along, it's harmonious, there's no argument, there's a sense of well-being that kind of pervades everybody. Yeah, and as we live in this world, you know, with this kind of digital age, obviously there are lots of, there's some anyway, drawbacks, you know, having mobile devices, very distracting. We can feel a bit more isolated because we're not really talking to each other as much. But the digital age also has a good effect, that we're linked to each other. And we feel a sense of, you know, we're not just linked through physical proximity anymore. You know, in the old days, you know, you hang out with your friends and your family, we live in your neighborhood. But now, you know, the family could be anywhere in the world. And the people that you connect with doesn't have to be always be, you know, with the same social background or cultural background. It could be anybody that, you know, you connect with on the digital age and the digital devices. So we're much more connected than before. So how we feel, how we look after our mind also affect so many people around us. And that's the thing. If you feel, you know, you want to change, make a difference in the world, look after your own heart, look after your mind. Make sure it's that peaceful, make sure it's content, make sure there's a sense of well-being. Then all these good qualities start to bubble up naturally. Trust, care, clarity. And then as you feel those deep inside yourself, it starts to radiate naturally outward. People around you can feel that. So sometimes when you're practicing meditation, when you're practicing, you know, kind of developing wholesome state of mind, it's just not for yourself that benefits from that. The benefits just radiate and multiply. It's outward. People see you're peaceful, they get inspired, and they start doing that. Or, you know, they're feeling down, they talk to you, you have the skillful means to still lift their mind a little bit. And that makes all the difference. Yeah. And that's one of the great blessings of being a senior monk in a monastery. You know, sometimes you see people coming to the monastery, sometimes young, sometimes not so young. Well, when you're 50 like I am, everybody's young. Lots of young people come in, they get very distracted, very confused, depressed. But then after just a couple of days of kind of quiet, a couple of days of, you know, sitting, being in a wholesome community, their mind starts to brighten. You can feel that sense of well-being starts to come up. And then sometimes, you know, and they leave much more happier, much more sense of ease. I mean, the problem is still there, whatever it is that drove them to the monastery to escape. But at least they have some tools to kind of cope with that. Some of it, you know, kind of a bit of peace, a bit of clarity, just to either sit with the situation, sit with the problem, or resolve it in a skillful way. Not from negativity, not from a sense of, you know, idealism, but from clarity of a calm mind. And that's why, like I said, you know, one of the drawback anyway is of the digital age is it does distract the mind. And, you know, going forward, if you don't know how to calm the mind, how to kind of turn these things off or put it on flight mode or whatever, the mind will become increasingly distracted, and then with that distraction the energy starts to, you know, be depleted, and then you get the usual mental afflictions, the mental issues that come up, you know, the depression, the anxieties, not being able to sleep, not being able to kind of connect with the people around you. And sometimes and then of course when that happens you think it's your fault, it's something you're doing wrong, you're not doing it right. But no, it's just almost like a natural law. A mental natural law. If the mind has low energy, you don't know how to, if it's distracted, you don't know how to calm it down or re-energize it, you know, it gets a bit negative. That's normal. It's not your fault. Yeah, but it does point to a need for a bit of calmness, a bit of clarity. You don't have to kind of watch the breath all day long. You don't have to walk around and mutter or do the mantra or whatever. But a bit of, you know, a couple of times during the day, you know, sitting quietly by yourself, you know, allowing, you know, just, you know, connecting with the body, connecting with your physical self, asking, where am I? How am I feeling? Just connecting, just not much. Allows the mind to kind of stabilize, allows the mind, you know, to calm down, allow all the distraction, the issues that, you know, swirl around your mind sometimes to kind of, you know, dissipate a little bit. So it's always a balance between, you know, doing things and a balance of kind of calmness. You know, you don't have to sit on the top of a mountain for months and months on end to calm the mind. You can do it, you know, in the midst of your activity. But you have to be, you know, you have to have the intention. You have to plan. You have to be a bit skillful to kind of fit into your daily schedule somehow. You have to give it importance. and just remember that. Sometimes you're busy, and you know it's easy to skip, you know, calming the mind. So you just keep looking after yourself. But just remember that, you know, when you're doing that, yeah, the few minutes during the day affects your whole day sometimes. The mind's not calm. Sometimes, you know, you have a good meditation, sit, you just walk around, and the world's a beautiful place. And it's the same world sometimes that you walk around. You know, sometimes you're in a bad mood, everything looks terrible. What's changed? The world hasn't changed, it's always the same. Always, you know, beauty and ugliness. Always, you know, injustice. But always, you know, lots of acts of generosity, acts of, you know, heroicism in the world. But there's also, you know, terrible violence sometimes, from time to time, that you can read about. So the world is always like that. It's always the same thing when the Buddha became enlightened. When the Buddha was around, he also faced the same social issue. But he still became enlightened. He still was able to kind of spread his teaching of peace and wisdom to the world. And throughout, you know, the history, many monks and nuns, all different tradition, all different culture, still became enlightened. So the world hasn't gotten any better, hasn't gotten any worse. Regardless of what you read in the newspaper, it's always the same. People are, you know, greedy people, angry people, do different, you know, do silly things, and they don't see clearly. But there's still opportunity, really, for each and every one of us here to practice what the Buddha laid down. But you have to have that intention, have to, you know, kind of place importance to it. And you have to balance between, yeah, the different kind of responsibility that you have. You know, when you're more busy, yeah, do as, you know, not as much meditation. When you have more free time, then you do more. Just kind of ability, just kind of a balance of, you know, knowing when and where, time and place. There's no point, you know, being in university and dreaming that you want to take a 3-month retreat or whatever, and, you know, kind of not happy to be doing what you are doing. You know, if you're a uni student at the moment, you have lots of course exams coming up, then you do what needs to be done in terms of, you know, your duties towards your subject. But then when there's holiday, when there's time, there's weekend, then you can set aside a little bit of time to devote just to nourishing your mind, nourishing your heart. So it's always kind of not one or the other, you know. But it takes wisdom. It takes common sense. So sometimes people approach Buddhism, they always kind of look to monks or teachers, and, you know, what should I do? You know, the answer, you know, only you know what you should do. And that changes depending on circumstances, time and place. And that's the thing, not to kind of abandon your common sense, abandon the wisdom that you have. To know for yourself what's good for yourself at this moment. Yeah. And not, you can kind of always think, you know, yeah, what is the right thing to do? What's the skillful things to do? And that might change. And sometimes you make mistakes, it's okay. You can, you know, kind of accept responsibility and move forward. You know, kind of understanding that unless you're fully enlightened, you make mistakes from time to time. You err on one side, err on the other side. That's okay. Just keep letting go, keep forgiving, keep accepting, keep learning, and keep moving on. Yeah. Life is, you know, sometimes full of obstacles, full of challenges. But it's not so important whether you face obstacles, it's whether you learn from that. Some people have, you know, easy time, but then they don't learn from their success. And then eventually when that turns, they suffer a lot over it because they think, you know, it's their rightful heritage to always meet with things that they want. One thing we know about the Buddha's teaching is, yeah, everything changes from time to time. No one's always, you know, meet with success all the time. And no one always meets with failure all the time. From time to time, you may feel that you're kind of stuck with this or the stars line up terrible for you. But things change. And just going to be aware that whatever's happening, this will change. That's why Ajahn Chah's, you know, famous teaching. Whatever's happening, and it helps you kind of let go. Whatever's happening in your mind, just say, this will change. Happiness comes, this will change. Not that you can't enjoy it, you can't, you know, kind of experience it, but knowing that will change. Unhappiness comes, this will change. So then you don't get locked into this mental state of thinking anything lasts a long, long time. Because they change. And when they change, you're not so shocked by it. you're healthy, you're young, you have less energy now, sure, that will change. May not be tomorrow, maybe 20 years time, but sure, it will change. Yeah, just knowing that, you can be in the present moment, be aware of what's happening, be in touch, but not get carried away, not want to hold things, you know, like this forever. When you're happy, you want to stay forever, and then when you're unhappy, you want it to change very quickly. And then one of the things with the law of impermanence, we like to apply the law of impermanence to people we don't like. Oh, so-and-so is very annoying. I'm waiting for impermanence to come. When is impermanent? Why don't you impermanent yourself? And then things, you know, and things to me, well, we have good time with our friends. They say, oh, this is what heaven is like. I want this to last forever and ever and ever. That doesn't work either. Yeah. So just, you know, reflecting on the basic truth. You know, everything changes. So we just kind of can enjoy things. And then knowing that, yeah, you're not responsible. Things change, then it's not your fault when they change. You don't feel proud because things are going right, but you don't get depressed when things start to go wrong. You know that things are happening according to causes and conditions. You know, we know the Buddhist says, you know, Buddhism is this religion. It's really actually more of a educational system. It's about conditionality. So it's actually quite scientific. Except some of the laws that we cannot experience regarding the mental mind. But it's about conditions. You want to be happy, Buddhists always said, establish the conditions for your happiness. It's not about wishing, wanting to be happy. But yeah, see what the cause is for happiness. The cause of happiness is doing good things. Being generous, being kind, being helpful, and letting go of negative things. You know, negativity, anger, vengefulness, hurting other people, stealing, taking advantage of other people. You don't do any of that. And then there's a sense of safety, sense of well-being. And that's a wonderful thing about the law of karma. It's like gravity. Whatever you give away, it comes back to you. Whatever you do has an impression, whether anybody sees it, knows about it or not. But you have faith in that. Yeah, so you always try to establish wholesome conditions, wholesome causes for your happiness, sense of well-being. Whatever it is that you want from life, going to law of karma, whatever it is that you want from other people, instead of looking around and says, I want this, I want that, I want more of this, more of that. I want to be respected. I want to be loved. I want to be wealthy. I want to be powerful. Which is normal. But what is that you want, really want? Give that to others. Give that to the world. Yeah, so you want to be respect? Then be respectful to others. You want to be careful? Then be caring to the people around you. So all that good stuff will come back to you eventually. You don't want people to lie to you, then never lie to anybody. Even though it might feel the easy thing to do, be truthful. And those things come back to you. And that's kind of the beauty of practicing the Buddha's path. Goodness starts to snowball, happens by itself. When you establish the causes for a sense of well-being, sense of peace, sense of harmony, they start to grow and blossom. Yeah. And like I said, if you're one of those people anxious about what the future will bring, the end of the earth because of climate change, or the stock market is going to crash or whatever, someone's going to blow up the building when you're in it, all sorts of terrifying things can happen. Yes, sure, anything can happen in the future. But you're really, you know, concerned about what the future will bring, then place a lot of awareness in the present moment, because the future is made from the present moment. Yeah, so put a lot of love, a lot of clarity, a lot of peace in the present moment. And the future will be the same. Yeah, it doesn't come out from left field or right field. It comes from the present moment. So always whatever's happening in your present moment in your life, put a lot of love, put a lot of clarity, put a lot of acceptance. Whatever's happening, just see, how can I learn from this? When you meet with success, how can you learn from it? Meet with failure, how can I learn from this? You're suffering, how can I learn? Instead of taking it to be a sense of self, blaming yourself or blaming others, how can I learn from this? How can I be a better person? Someone says something terrible to you, some mean things, criticize you, instead of, you know, feeling annoyed, depressed, unhappy, or angry, judging, or vengeful, want to get back, you think, okay, that's not very nice when people say mean things to me. So maybe in the future, may I not say mean things to other people? may be kind and gentle where I can. Yeah? So even though you have a negative experience, you can learn from that and grow from it. Yeah? And that's the beauty of wisdom. Ajahn Chah said, there's nothing that you cannot make use of. You're wise, have a clear head. Whatever's happening, you can always use it as a practice to learn. You have an annoying person in your classroom, it's teaching you patience, teaching you acceptance. Right? A person who is mean, then you still understand meanness feels like that. And then this also kind of warns you not to repeat it. You don't like people saying mean things to you, then try to refrain from saying that to others. So path is always the balance between compassion and wisdom. You know, knowing to how to make a difference in the world, but also knowing how to look after yourself through, you know, a bit of downtime, a bit of quietness generating. I always just want to kind of express my appreciation, you know, express my happiness, really, to seeing people, young people interested in the Buddhist teaching, interested in wholesome qualities, interested in developing, you know, kind of peace, and interested in developing the mind. And like I say, and the skills that you cultivate in meditation, skill that you cultivate and listen to the Dhamma, are the same skills that you need to lead a happy and fulfilling lives. Ability to accept yourself and others, ability to look at positive things in the world, ability just to let go of the negativity of life. And once you learn to do that, you can be happy anywhere, in any situation. But you always learn from life, good, the bad, and the ugly. Whatever comes your way, you can always make use of that. So I just want to kind of sum up the talk. Yeah, you know, I don't know how much it has to do with balance, but it's just this ability just to make use of different experiences in your life. Whatever happens, instead of kind of getting caught up in the sense of self, blaming yourself and others when things go wrong, just always ask yourself, what can I learn from this? How can I grow from this? And with that attitude, you know, life is always a beautiful experiment. Life is always interesting because there's always something you can learn, even if nothing is happening. Yeah. So leave that for your reflection on this Friday night. Okay, so any question regarding the talk or any... Am I supposed to take the question from the box or something?
8:45.
All right, okay. Yes.
How can you find balance between feeling like you're giving up or like giving into kind of someone else's expectations or like some pressure that they're putting on you, and because sometimes we, like when we do want to care for that other person, we kind of want to do what they want us to do, and it's hard to know like whether it is what we want. So I guess it just comes down to like making the time for ourselves, or something like that. I don't know. But yeah, what do you think about that?
Yes, I guess my understanding was just balancing between kind of what you want to do or the expectations of another person or the group of what you should do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one of the ways to kind of deal with those kind of social situations, which is, you know, and you're in a group anywhere, there's always the, what do I want to do, and what should the group want to do? And one of the ways to kind of deal with that is sometimes, to try to, a bit of peace, a bit of clarity in the mind. you know, kind of a lot of times if it's a big decision, just not to try to come to a conclusion too quickly and not to act out of habitual reaction. Mm-hmm. You know, just kind of just say to yourself, okay, you know, this is what I feel now, but I wonder what I feel like tomorrow. Yeah, just kind of keep thinking, allow not to overthink it, but allow it just to sit with you. And just to kind of pose those kind of open-ended questions. You know, what do I really want to do? And leave it like that. And then sometimes when you're not thinking about it, you know, and your mind is peaceful, the more at ease, the answers come up. Yeah, sometimes so much of our life, we try to overthink things, you know, and yes or no, I have to do this, a positive or this, and negative or whatever. And sometimes it makes us more tense and more confused. There's so much thinking. But try to go to your abdomen, go to your heart. So what your head thinks, you know, what do I feel like? What's the right thing? What do I feel like is the right thing to do? And allow the answer to come to you. And not try to come to, you know, to a conclusion. But just kind of pose that and wait. Sometimes even just 20, 30 minutes, sometimes a day or two, you have, you know, the time to do that. And allow those things to come. And sometimes you think that, you know, in calmness, in clarity, in peace, this answer starts to bubble up. Sometimes the answer that you don't expect, least expected, they say, oh, and on hindsight, that seems the right thing. Yeah, and really, only you yourself know for sure what your needs are from moment to moment, those changes over time. Sometimes you have more energy, you can give more, other times you just don't have that. So you have to know what your boundaries are. Yeah. Sometimes you can talk to your friends and your teacher, and they can give guidance. But really, ultimately, yeah, you yourself have to make those decisions. Ajahn, any tips to suppress our ego? One is to first to accept it. That is normal. That unless you're fully enlightened, you have an ego, a sense of self. Oh, and then sometimes you compare yourself. You know, I want to be, you know, good. Am I good, bad, or the same as other people? So this kind of comparison. But once you have a more peaceful mind, more sensitive mind, you start to see that actually there's a lot of stress and tension, a lot of suffering, and always trying to compare yourself to others. Yeah. Or compare yourself to an ideal of, oh, I should be compassionate, I should always be happy, and I should love everybody. Oh, I have these mean thoughts about this other person. I'm not a very good Buddhist, or whatever. I think a lot of time first, you know, come with, you know, first is to accept who you are and where you're at this time. Yeah. And then also to kind of see that, you know, if you have a very kind of a big ego or a strong sense of self, there's always a lot of suffering involved in that. Because you're always constantly comparing yourself, and sometimes, you know, you think you're the smartest kid, always there's always somebody smarter, obviously, around the block somewhere. And then you get very annoyed, or you think, oh, you should get A's all the time, and then, you know, somebody, you know, get better grades than you do, higher scores, and you get annoyed. Or you say something wrong, you're like, oh, I shouldn't say something wrong because I'm supposed to be the smart one. So this kind of holding yourself, you know, in any way, it's a lot of attention, a lot of stress. And then we always make mistakes from time to time. And you think, you know, you have a strong ego, you can feel that, you know, oh, you don't want to say wrong things. And you might try to lie or kind of, you know, fudge and to cover. So any sense of ego, really, is a lot of suffering. And the more sensitive you are to it, the more you kind of come to accept yourself. Yeah, we all have strengths and weaknesses. And you don't try to make yourself more than that. You make mistakes, just accept it and move on. You get things right, people compliment you. Just realize, yeah, it's just that much. Yeah, people, we all want to be, you know, complimented. We all want to be, you know, kind of praised. It's normal. But then again, if you attach too much to it, then people criticize you, you get very annoyed. So that's how you can see how attached you are to criticism. People praise you, you feel really good, it's a great day, someone said nice things to me, oh, I'm whatever, the best friends they ever have, And if you're happy and then someone says, oh, you're a terrible friend. You say the wrong things all the time. You never come on time or whatever. And you feel annoyed. Then you realize, okay, yeah, I'm a bit attached to this praise and blame. The Buddha said these changing conditions, they change all the time. One of the good things about, you know, having a peaceful mind is that you're always at peace. You don't need the external props. And a sense of ego is always, you know, a lot of time it's kind of creating a lot of stress and tension with comparison. And sometimes, you know, we always have to be around people who praises us all the time. It can't be by yourself. If you have a very delicate ego that needs to be stroked all the time. And it's attention, you know, a lot of times it's attention. You're always looking for praise and get annoyed when you get criticized. But after all, you have clarity, you see, yeah, it's a lot of suffering. Why don't I just drop it? So no need to suppress the ego. My kind of advice is just to kind of first accept it and try to work with it in whatever ways you can. Realize that you also understand that you have an ego, so does other people. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So try to be gentle around their weaknesses. Try to be gentle around their strength, understanding people's strength and weaknesses as well. Right? Yeah? So focusing on, you know, being sensitive around people around you. You know, you know, because your ego, you like praise, so try not to criticize people unduly. Or try to do it with the right time, the right intention. You know, when you want to point out people's weaknesses, hope it's with the intention that they will, you know, kind of change for the better. They can improve themselves. That way they're happier. Yeah, so it's out of compassion that you point out faults in others. Not out of anger, irritation. They're annoying you, so you blast them. And sometimes, you know, in the modern world, we have this excuse that, oh, it's the truth. And you just blast them. Yeah, it's the truth. You know, you look fat in that jean. Yeah, it's not the truth. It's me. Or it's the truth that your cooking stinks. That's not the truth. You don't have to say it that way. Right? So sometimes we say, oh, it's the truth, and we say really mean things. So sometimes just check the intention behind it. You know, there's truth and also the skillful speech. And the Buddha always said that. Even if it's truth, if it's not beneficial, he wouldn't say that. Yeah. So just because something's true, there's not an excuse to kind of, you know, hurt someone's feeling. It's not just because, you know, it's the right thing. It's not someone, you know, to say mean things to each other. Yeah. So kind of, you know, and knowing, you know, because you are, you know, we all have egos. We're sensitive. Everybody likes praise. No one likes blame. And you know that. Then you're trying to, you know, exercise restraint. Trying to be skillful when it comes to other people's ego. Even if they have a delicate ego, you don't kind of try to poke at them too much. Right? If you are given reflection, do it out of compassion. Remember the law of karma. Whatever you give away, the good stuff you give away, all comes back to you in measure. And the negativity you give out, that also comes back to harm you in the future. Yeah, so in terms of, you know, kind of working with the ego, a bit of acceptance, then a bit of gentleness when it comes to other people's ego. But not to, because you think it's the truthful thing, to set them straight. You know, oh, you're very selfish. You only do think about yourself. Yeah, yeah. That may be true to a certain extent. But is that helpful? Is that beneficial? Is that the kind thing to say? Yeah. So try to act out of kindness and compassion, out of giving people the benefit of doubt, than out of, you know, a sense of you have to set them right. And the law of karma will do that eventually. Your job is, to the people around you, is to be gentle, to be kind. Yeah, to be harmonious. Yeah, to say things that are beneficial to people around you. And then that brings a sense of well-being with yourself. You're not afraid of people judging you. It's afraid of people saying things to you because you're not saying mean things to other people. Yeah? So working with the ego is accepted. Work with it in ways that, you know, that is beneficial. And then just to know that unless you're fully enlightened, there'll be a sense of self. But any sense of self, as you become more sensitive, is a lot of suffering. Constant comparing yourself against other, your ideal self, you don't meet up. You know, rarely do we meet our ideal. And you just hold on to the ideals too tightly. Then a lot of suffering, a lot of tension arises from that. Yeah, so knowing that, you're just going to work with whatever you have. Okay, any questions or comments? Here you go. Balance is important. But revenge sometimes good. May someone get revenge to get to feel balance? No, I think that what the Buddha said, you know, acting out of unwholesome intention always bring bad results. If you have unwholesome intention, it always brings. And vengefulness is never really good. And sometimes you can see for yourself. Someone, you know, annoy you, you say mean things. If you have the clarity of mind, you're like, oh, I shouldn't have said that, but yeah, never mind, you said it already. Yeah, so you can learn from that. Yeah. Saying mean things out of revengefulness, out of anger, irritation. If you're mindful to the effect that it has on other people, and you're mindful to kind of how you would feel if someone said the same thing to you, it's not pleasant. And also, that's the thing with anger sometimes, you have to be careful. It feels good. It brings energy to the mind, and you feel you're so right. So righteous anger, you know, so-and-so stole your boyfriend, or so-and-so stole your money and, you know, borrowed some money and didn't return to pay, and he's running around in his Benz. He's got a Benz. Why didn't he pay my $50 or whatever? That is so wrong. Next time I see him, I'm going to, you know, kind of demand my money in front of everybody just to embarrass him. Yeah, it might feel the right thing. That's my anger. And that's very kind of deluding. It gives you energy. It gives you a sense of self, a focus that you've been wrong and you're in the right, totally in the right to say this or to do this, to get back at this person. But that negativity, a lot of time, it can be quite tiring. Yeah? And it ultimately is kind of unwholesome energy that's in the mind that it gets you obsessed about. And that sometimes it's kind of a burning sensation that you're not aware of. And when you finally drop it, you feel, oh, I'm so free. Otherwise, you know, you want to get revenge to this person, right? You have to obsess about it. You have to plan it. You have to make sure it's properly, right? So anger is like holding on to this piece of coal. You're so angry at this person, you're going to throw it and burn them back because they hurt you in some way, unfairly. Fairly, unfairly. Intentionally, unintentionally, they hurt you. And they're in the wrong, and you're such in the right, and you want to throw this hot piece of coal onto this person. But in order to do that, you have to pick up this piece of coal yourself, hot piece of coal, and you burn yourself first. That's number one. Right? And when you throw, sometimes you hit them, sometimes you don't. But who gets burned first? You. Yeah, backfire. So knowing that vengeance, irritation, anger, and how it feels in the mind. Remember, you want to get revenge to this person, right? They're usually not around, so you got to plan for it. So you're holding on to this anger for days, sometimes weeks, some months. Yeah, you might not get the chance to get revenge, but who's suffering the whole time? You are, because you're remembering, you're reliving the terrible story. You know, they did this to you, they did this to me. I should have done it. I could do this and the other stuff. Yeah. So vengeance is never, never kind of wholesome and never good, really, because you're suffering the whole time. And do you really want to suffer weeks and hours and months on end over something that's gone already? That, you know, yeah, if someone stole your money, you know, it's gone. You're not going to be able to get it back, even if you've hurt this person. Someone hurt you. You know, that feeling of hurt is still there. You're not going to get rid of it. You might feel temporarily better if you smack somebody back, that person back. But it's very temporary. A lot of times it won't happen. A lot of times you smack people around you that you love. A lot of times you get angry and you start to take out people that you love more than the person that you want to aim your anger towards. Yeah? But sometimes it's an emotional thing. You know, obviously, you know, an angry mind is not so rational. So also knowing that, you're trying to work with it. Try to feel the anger in the body somewhere. And usually it's not a positive thing. Usually there's a tension somewhere. There's a tiredness. You get angry a lot, you get tired a lot. That's why angry people get depressed, because they wear themselves out thinking about feeding the anger all the time. And then you get depressed, and anger is negativity. First you point it outward. After a while, you start to point it inward. And that's why angry people get depressed when they get older. It's not a surprise. It's very quite common thing that you notice. Your anger character gets depressed or get very lonely because you're blasting everybody around you. Yeah. So, you know, someone said, you know, a good simile for anger is like you have, you know, some dung in your pocket. You know, everywhere you go, it stinks. And when you carry around this kind of anger, after a while, you drive away your friends because they don't want to hear about it. You complain about the same thing. You know, someone's angry, you don't have to say about the same thing over and over again, day in and day out. It gets very boring. But they're obsessed about it. That's fair enough. But you can see the effect that it has to people around you. it starts to, you know, your negativity starts to bleed outward. Yeah, and you can't contain that. So a lot of time it affects yourself and the people around you that you love more than the people that you want to get vengeance back. So just tread very carefully. Anger or something. But the good thing about anger is actually because it's kind of so unpleasant, that's much easier to let go of anger than it's to let go of greed. We always think greed is good, you know. It's nice to have two shoes, two pair of pants instead of one, right? It's nice to have two cars instead of one. Get more choices. It's nice to have a bigger house instead of a smaller house, right? Or nice to have, you know, whatever, more convenience, more this. So greed is much more subtle, harder to let go of. But anger, you're a bit sensitive. You can see, well, it's not very wholesome. It's not very nice. A bit of meanness in my mind. That's not very good. Yeah. So you can drop that easier. But sometimes greed and delusion is harder to take. Anger is, you know, it's kind of what do you call that? Unwholesome, make a lot of bad karma from anger. But once you become more sensitive, it's also easier to let go. Yeah, because you see that, you know, you're sensitive, see suffering. Judging people is very suffering. Comparing yourself, thinking mean things about people, it's a lot of suffering involved. Because you're not happy. Yeah? And it's a tension around, a bit nervousness, tenseness, and you let go and you're like, oh, I'm so happy. What people do is their business. Nothing to do with me. Yeah? And you become more happy, more acceptance of the things around you. And not worrying, you know, not fault-finding, not judging, not criticizing. Yeah. Things are the way they are. We don't live in a perfect world. This is not a heavenly realm. Things happen. People cheat on you. People steal from you. People lie to you. People say mean things. Not the end of the world, though. You can still move on. You can still learn from it. And you can still make good karma. What people do outside is, you know, doesn't really in effect doesn't really affect you so much when the mind is calm and clear. Questions or comments? On the bench?
Yeah. So just continuing on about people with a lot of anger in themselves, I noticed that as you mentioned, they just keep going on that motion of complaining and not realizing that they're so caught up in their own situation and their own world that they don't realize they're pushing everyone away. And would you be able to suggest ways for them to open their eyes and realize that this is what's been happening?
I think if you're a close friend, then you try, you know, and this is kind of a bit of a balancing act of, you know, trying to find the right way, the right time and place. Because anger comes and goes, so you wait until when they're ebbing, not when they're full force, and they're not in the mood to listen. But sometimes, you know, after a while, they're a bit calming down. So wait until they're a bit more calm and steady. They just, you know, kind of out of compassion, saying, you know, yeah, you know, you're right, it's absolutely right. Whatever that person did to you is really awful and terrible, and nothing should happen. You know, nothing. There's no excuse for that. But this anger in yourself, really, you know, you're suffering over it more than anybody else. Yeah. So maybe you can find ways to let go. But also, the balance is that you can offer these advice to your friend and your loved one, but also knowing well that sometimes they're just not ready to let go at that time. So, you know, a lot of patience and a lot of acceptance. Okay, this time they're in this mood, and some things are just very hard to let go of, you know, abuse and all that, you know, abusive relationship, you know, abuse when you were little, or just, you know, heartbreak. You know, people whose hearts is broken, been cheated on, it just takes time to get over. Yeah. And knowing that these things take time, and just, you know, kind of offer your love and support. You know, I'm here if you want to, but yeah, if you want to stay angry, that's fine. Yeah, because nothing more annoyed about being angry, someone tells you shouldn't be angry, and then you get more angry.
Yeah, that's right, because what I find is that the only way they know how to respond is if they lash out, and that's to you, it's like, why are you being so angry? I'm just, you know, providing them a few words of advice or just something to make you think about things differently.
Right, yeah. Right. And that's what I mean. Just wait the time and just kind of offer that, but also kind of try to be as maintain your sense of calmness as well, and not to be overly excited. And then over time, things are passed. And sometimes people's wisdom faculties are different. Some people are really sharp. After a while, they realize, yeah, I mean, why am I holding on to this? You know, this thing is long gone. Person's gone, moved already. Why am I holding on suffering? I should move on. Yeah, sometimes it happens naturally. Life happens. You know, they see people again. other times, you know, it could be years, and then they're still holding on, and that's where you just have to say, well, okay, you know, this is kind of their thing. I'm going to support what I can, but, you know, can only do so much. And people have their own kind of inclination and karmic thing to work through.
Yeah.
And they will move on when they're ready to move on, not when we feel that they should move on. Yeah. That's the thing with life sometimes, and relationship. Yes?
I agree, and I understand that holding on to anger, it would only lead to suffering. But what if it involves like a bigger issue like racism, for example?
With who? Like what?
Like racism?
Yeah, sure.
For example, like for the black people in America a long time ago, like slavery and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if the anger stems up from like there, and then... like it leads to a better life now for them, right? How do you explain that then?
No, I think there are always social injustice, but I think sometimes when you just because you know when you meet with injustice of different you know of whatever ways, it doesn't mean that just because you don't get angry, it doesn't mean that you can't change it from a wholesome way. Yeah, so you can understand. Yeah, you know that you still can act out of you know from calm and clarity. Knowing that the situation it's not ideal, but not from anger, you know, and that's why sometimes you can't understand like people are anti-abortion, they bomb. You know, you want to protect life and you bomb other people. I mean, that's where you know if you don't have a calm mind, you can justify anything, you know, for you know unless they agree with you. And then sometimes America can be very quite divisive in that way, that you're either my friend or my enemy. And sometimes the world is very you know it's not like that. It's not black and white. That there are many variations. You know, and many perspective, and sometimes yeah. But I think you know you can still work for social change. You know, when you're more peaceful and you have more energy, sometimes anger can get the ball rolling, but a lot of times it can be self-defeating as well. You're too angry, you drive people away. But you can explain the situation. You know, this is not fair. This is happening. You know, why don't we work from it? You know, whatever. You know, drunken driving or whatever. Or, you know, child abuse or you know, kind of domestic violence. You can work for those social causes without being caught up in the vengefulness of getting even. But, you know, with education, understanding people who hurt other people are themselves suffering from it. First, they suffer because maybe they've got someone, you know, who've done it to them in the past. And secondly, you know, such a negative karma will come back as well. Yeah, and also doing something, you know, when you have more sensitivity in the mind, performing evil act or unwholesome act, it's a major amount of suffering that sometimes, you know, you see, you know, you remember that act that you've done to other people and it doesn't feel right. And you know that. That's why sometimes people who do a lot of terrible things are usually a lot of time, you know, don't have a lot of clarity. They're either drunk all the time or they do things because they can't live with themselves. Because they can remember. They don't want to remember those things that have hurt or harmed other people. Because it's always in the mind. No one's around. You still know what you did. Years and years ago. So people who hurt other people really tremendously, they can feel that. And it's always in their mind that comes up. A lot of remorse, a lot of guilt comes up from time to time. So you know, not to say that you have to get angry, that you have to get angry to work for social you know, progress. And that's just because you're happy that you don't do anything either. Sometimes you know, people accuse that, you know, you Buddhists are always letting go. You're bad for the economy because you don't consume anything. But that's not true. I mean, look where the consumption has led us to, right? Has led us to climate change and a lot of whole bunch of, you know, issues and unpleasantness that we don't have to. We're a bit more calm, a bit more content. Maybe we're not pushing, you know, such a heavy burden on the earth that we live in, that we live a smaller footprint. Yeah. And I think, you know, going forward, consumerism can only go so far. And then there is, you know, a movement towards, you know, more of balance of, yeah, this is good enough. I don't have to have the latest thing. I don't have to have the biggest car all the time. That is, you know, a trend of downsizing. You know, small houses are in now. You don't have to have 6 bedrooms for 2 people anymore. You know, I go back and visit my friends and relatives. And yeah, for a time, you know, you have these massive big cars. And petrol is really, really expensive, but they still ride around in big cars. And yeah, you know, my friends, family, yeah, there's only 2 of them. They got 4-bedroom house full of stuff. 3 cars, like, you only got 2 people. How can you have 3 cars? because we might need the other car on the weekend or whatever. Yeah, there's always, you know, this idea of, you know, always more is better, more is more convenient. But after a while, you know, you have to maintain them. You have to kind of look after these things. You have to work harder. These things don't come for free. So after a while, people start to have some more clarity. So there is a movement now that, you know, good enough. Instead of, you know, wanting the best thing, this is good enough. And people, you know, are more, a bit more content, a bit more peaceful. And it gives you more time to do other things. You know, and you always spend, you know, lots of money on your expensive holidays and on your expensive cars and clothes. And you have very little time to do other things. And you have to get a better job. And better jobs, they don't pay you lots of money for sitting around twiddling your thumb. They pay you because they want to get more work out of you, more pressure, more things to do. Right? They promote you to a higher position because they want more work out of you. That usually entails more pressure. Usually entails more time, you know, at work. Yeah, so there's less time. So there's a balance. So people realizing, yeah, okay, you know, I want a certain level of comfort, which is fair enough. But also, do I really want to work, you know, 60 hours for the next 20 years? Or do I want to work just 40 hours and have a comfortable living, but not the best of everything, but, you know, enough to move on? Yeah, so sometimes going forward, you know, people put more emphasis on a sense of well-being, like emotional sense of well-being, than just a material sense of well-being. Yeah. Yeah, but it doesn't have, yeah, and sometimes it takes clarity. So, you know, from the Buddhist perspective, clarity is much more important than anger to get things moving. Because you make the right decision, you make it from the right place, the intention. You have wholesome intention that creates wholesome results. If you have unwholesome intention, you will have create unwholesome results. Yeah, I hope that's helpful. Yes?
My question is a bit similar. How do you stop yourself from accepting a situation when it means you're giving up rather than you're practicing content? It's something that you should be motivated for, but you don't find the motivation, you're just accepting the situation as it is.
That's... Well, it depends on the situation. Is there a situation, like unwholesome situation, or sometimes a bit of patience, things resolve themselves. And that's one of the things that only you yourself know. Whether, you know, you're in a situation and you're giving up a certain amount of happiness to know that is this is temporary and that, you know, over a long time we're both happy for it. Or is this, you know, you're giving a sense of happiness over it and then it leads to a decline in sense of happiness and then, you know, more abuse or whatever later. Things like that, decisions that you have to make regarding situation in your life, I think only you yourself would know. And sometimes it comes from kind of having a calm mind and kind of feeling in touch with your heart. How do you feel about this? Does this feel right, this giving up to people expectation, this giving up to the social situation? Does that feel wholesome? Does that feel like something is going to lead to, you know, a better result? Because the Buddha is always not always talking about, you know, doing what's happy all the time in the present moment. He always talks about, you know, foregoing your immediate happiness for long-term happiness. You know, sometimes, like I said, you know, he generally advised the monk to get up early in the morning. It's never pleasant to get up early in the morning, right? But you give up the small unpleasantness of getting up early in the morning for the wholesome, the benefit of later, of having a trained mind, of having a steady mind that can, you know, overcome slight discomfort, right? He always encouraged the monk, yeah, to go with simplicity. That's not always comfortable. You know, always, you know, everybody wants, you know, instead of having three robes, you want four robes, five robes, you know, extra socks, extra hats, extra lots of things. But that always, he knows that that always doesn't always lead to happiness, because when you can make do with little, you have a more stability, confidence in the mind that you can cope with things when things are not so pleasant. Yeah, so sometimes just being in a pleasant situation, being aware of it, but kind of have this patient endurance just to be bear with unpleasant things for a little bit. It stretches your muscles, your mental muscles, that to deal with unpleasant situation later on. Because sometimes you can't escape. Sometimes there's pain in the body. You know, and you want to escape that. But when you get cancer, when you get older, there's always pain in the body. So when you have a strong mind, you can deal with it. You have a patient mind who can accept these things. But if you're not, you're on this person who always want to change, always want to move, when things become unpleasant, you start to, you know, kind of change your situation, move around, and alter things, then there's not that stability of mind to deal with unpleasant things later. And life sometimes is, yeah, can be unpleasant. And there's nothing you can do about it. So that's all you do is kind of bear with it. But, you know, and it's really up to you to know, you know, the situation that you're kind of putting up with, whether it's going to bring wholesome results or unwholesome. But sometimes you can ask yourself, you know, is this what I'm doing, is that going to bring wholesome results for myself or others? Or is it going to bring more pain and suffering for myself and others? Yeah. And then sometimes, you know, kind of have a bit of stillness, a bit of calm mind, and a bit of openness. Just allow the answer to kind of come to you. Instead of trying to figure everything out. Does that make sense, or? Yeah. Yes?
So, it's very nice to be nice to other people. Like, everybody wants to be nice to other people.
That's right.
And we want people to be nice to us.
That's right.
I feel like sometimes if you're too nice to people, you get taken advantage of. Is there any way around that? Just give an example. Like,
yeah.
Since you're uni students, mostly uni students here, like, when you do group projects, you get too nice to your... Not too nice, like, there are sometimes members that don't want to contribute.
Yeah, sure.
And if you just don't say anything, you just not do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just kindly, like, plead for them to do their part, they wouldn't care unless you start, like, getting a bit passive-aggressive. Is there any way around that?
I think... with group situation, a bit of frankness, a bit of directness always help. But it depends. I have to kind of caution you, and you probably know already from reading in different kind of journals, that in any group situation, any companies, any social situations regarding work and allocation of work, 10% of the people do 70% of the work. Right? 20% of people do 20%. And the other 70% of people do about 20% of the work. And that's always everywhere. I mean, and where I work in the U.S., they're getting better at it. So now they start to compensate. They know which one are the star performers, and they give the wages to those. Everybody else, they give just minimal. And then the people that they don't, you know, that don't do any work, they start to kind of weed them out slowly. And but that's, you know, knowing that, you kind of accept it. There's always kind of the super performer who do a lot of work because, you know, they're just got lots of energy, lots of brain power, maybe lots of coffee behind them or whatever. They do a lot of work. And then there's that one that is not so energetic, and that's fine to a certain extent. But you can, you know, if you're a group coordinator or a manager, also for their welfare, you should bring up, you know, if you're not contributing, then you're not also learning from the project, and that will harm you later on. And also harm in the sense that you're not learning from the project too. You know, you work in any group, people, everybody knows how much work everybody's doing. And then people will be negative towards you, and you're not going to get the promotion, you're not going to get the credit. Sure, you get away with doing less in school now because, you know, people, you know, the smart guys will do up most of the work anyway because that's kind of their programming. But then as you move forward to a job or something, your boss is going to notice, and you may not have such a nice boss to kind of so accepting that he's going to start to look and ask for results that you may not be able to perform. Yeah, so out of kindness, you should, you know, you try to point out to this person, but also knowing well that they might have some excuse that why they're not doing, or that, you know, or they are doing and somehow they're not noticing. So you can point out, you know, things with people. Time and place is important out of care and compassion, not out because you're annoyed with them, but out of care and compassion. But also knowing full well that some people are just not ready to accept that, so they won't. But it does. It means a bit of balancing. That, you know, pointing things out, but in a gentle and a kind way, and then not expecting that they will say, "Oh, thank you so much. Oh, you know, thank you for saying this. You know, I'm going to completely change my behavior." They won't. They'll give you excuses why they're doing what they're doing, which is fine. It's also normal human nature. Yeah. So just, yeah, you know, in the school, in the uni, at work, you do what you can. But the thing is, like, it's good karma. If you do the work and you do more than your share, it builds up. One, you learn a lot from the project. Two, someone will notice, and then you will be promoted accordingly anyway. If you don't, you've got so much skills, you can start your own company by then, right? Yeah, so doing more work, myself, it's never been a hindrance, actually. And a lot of people notice, and they appreciate that. And like you can see that, you know, they will take notice, and you're usually in the core kind of performers and be noticed for that, be, you know, kind of promoted accordingly. If they don't notice, at least you feel good about yourself. You know that you're not kind of, you know, it's never a good feeling. You know, some people do that, you know, even in the monastery. Some people, you know, after the meal, instead of washing the bowl, cleaning up, they just kind of sit and wait, and, you know, run off to the bathroom, and they come back 15 minutes. It's not done yet. They run back to the bathroom again. It's a lot of suffering. Just, like, go clean it. Yeah. Some of the things, you know, they see things, they just look the other way. Your sense that you can see, it's a lot of suffering. You know, if you put in the work, you feel good about yourself. You know, because you're making good karma. Yeah. But this kind of, oh, giving little and then hiding. You notice it's not very kind of a positive state of mind, and it's a lot of suffering involved. But people do it for whatever different condition they think, you know, maybe, you know, they're not feeling well, they're sick, and they just have low energy or whatever. Fair enough. And after a while, you know, in the monastery, we practice, you know, you do what you can and not to worry what the other people do. Sure, in the worldly sense, there's more of a balance that obviously, you know, you don't want to be carrying the ball and doing all the work all the time. So you do want to point out. But like I said, a lot of time, you know, if you're one of those kind of overachiever doing a lot of work, just you can point out to the people who are kind of underachiever and then let them make their own decision. But you don't have to moderate yourself. So if they don't do it, I don't do it either. Then you're making good bad karma in that sense, because you're falling into their trap. And you let other people dictate how you should, you know, kind of live your life. What people do is their business. You do what you can. You don't have to carry the ball for everybody. You do what you can, and then you just leave it at that. Yeah. So always trying to look at the positive. You know, look at people's strength, and but also accept people have weaknesses for different reasons. We don't know. Yeah. And maybe they think that's why it's good to communicate. Maybe they think they're doing their share for a different reason. Yeah. So not to assume too much. That's why we're, you know, communicating is important. Just to know, this is what I feel is happening. What do you feel like? Are you sick? Going through a divorce? Somebody dying in your family or something? You don't know. Something you don't. That's why the reason they're not doing. It's not some, you know, they're preoccupied with other stuff. Yeah. Yes?
I just got a question, but similar to that, just an extension to it. Just going into a workforce situation.
Yeah.
Sometimes being too nice, you get walked all over.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Because they've got this false understanding that, you know, the art of war is the Bible and this is how we should operate.
Uh-huh.
And I find that it's kind of like self-defeating, being a tiger yourself or trying to be bricked.
Mm.
So you can combat these people while you're at work. And it's kind of like you're going there, you think that there's benefits. There is benefits. However, it's such a, you know, it's like, it's you're just getting restrained from your full capabilities because you have to pretend to be this, this tough person that they expect you to be, but really you're not. That's not how you operate. You know? What do you think is the best way to handle a situation that way?
Like what? Like should you kind of be really a mean person or kind of tough person when you go to work or something, so
yeah,
that you don't get walked over?
Mm-hmm. Because they expect you. They've got this false understanding that, you know, to be the successful person.
That's why you have to be a tough
person. But really, that's not how it is.
No, that's not how it is. I mean, I read was an interesting book. Who's that? I think the book by somebody from Google or something, who talk about kind of having a clear mind, having positive kind of state of mind. Actually, people appreciate that. And they do this research, like emotional quotient or emotional intelligence, that actually people who are kind of know how to kind of... A mature people, you know, to connect with people, deal with people in a way that is kind of positive. Those emotional kind of mature people actually is something that the companies value and many social organizations value, and they actually focus on this person. And that happens across, you know, just not just kind of, you know, corporate world, but even in the army, people who rise up to the rank are usually people who are socially mature, who can work with the group of people, not just kind of, you know, overachiever, but, you know, kind of mean people and can only work by themselves. This kind of the solitude, the crazy genius or the nasty genius that people kind of picture. Going forward, because the world is such an interactive place, there's so many projects that you do now, you work with, you know, a group that so in the days of kind of, you know, doing by yourself doesn't apply so much anymore. So actually the ability to get along harmoniously, the ability to, you know, kind of communicate, set boundaries, you know, who's doing what and what you can contribute, is actually very, very important going forward. And people appreciate that, actually. So, you know, this ability that you think that, you know, because you're nice, people walk over you. No, I think there's a balance of, like, you know, being kind, being gentle, being helpful in the social situation, work situation. But also not kind of overly do it. Just set your boundaries and then communicate that. People appreciate, you know, people who are have clear with the boundaries. You know, I'm willing to, you know, to do my share of the project, do more, but not go in every weekend. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you have to express that. Sometimes, you know, your boss thinks, you know, obviously, you know, you the more you give, sometimes because you are very effective, then you get more project, and then, you know, they start to pile on your desk. But sometimes then that's when you need to communicate, need to have a sense of balance that, you know, okay, I'm willing to work whatever, an extra 1 or 2 hours a day, but certain things are off limits, you know, weekends, you know, like to have it off. Yeah. So sometimes just really to communicate and to know how much you can give. So that's sometimes that's important. Sometimes people don't know themselves and they think they can give and give and give and then they get burned out because, you know, they cross their threshold somewhere. So one of the main things is, you know yourself, know how much you can give, how much extra work you can do, know what kind of balances, what kind of other responsibility you have in your life. Like, you know, let's say, you know, you're single now, can work more, can go full tilt with the company, climb the ladder, do lots of projects, you know, to get recognized. And then when you have a family, you have a relationship, then you have less time. Then you need to communicate that, to know that for yourself as well. Yeah. So one of the main things is, you know, and that's where people get caught. They don't know themselves how much they can give and where their life situation changes. And then they get stuck in, you know, doing a lot. And then, you know, personal life suffers somewhere. The partner gets suffer, the kids get suffer. And then they don't know how to kind of balance. But I think main thing is with the work environment is, you know, social, worldly situation. Know yourself, your situation, where you're at, how much you can give regarding to yourself, your family, people, your friends around you. And then, you know, when it comes to work, you know, communicate that with your supervisor. And a lot of times people respect that. I always find, you know, work with different companies, you communicate this is what you can do with them, to them, and you'll give a take, you know, some boundary. Obviously, you know, there's a big deadline, okay, you're obviously willing to give more to finish the project, but you're not willing to do that every single weekend. And I think they appreciate that. A lot of times, you know, they say, okay, yeah, you know, I can come in a few weekends to finish off this or go on a road trip, you know, big push for a certain project that needs to be done. And then after that, you know, take a break, take a holiday. So you communicate, you're efficient, you do your job, you communicate, you're helpful. Usually it's noticed. Because company are in the business of, you know, making money by doing well. You're going to make money if you perform, the group perform harmoniously. People get along, they do better. They start to, you know, get disagreement, they start to, you know, backbite each other, they start to kind of undermine each other. Not a lot of things get done. So senior managers know that. So they want, generally, they want things to go well. They want you to be, you know, emotionally well. They don't want you to be too tired, you know, too depressed, because you can't work when you're like that. Like I said, and that's interesting that companies are getting more soft, or they're getting better at understanding, like, emotional, the employee's emotional intelligence. And you know, a lot of times, you know, like, you know, last year anyway, I gave a few talks to the, you know, the bankers. These are medium managers who kind of up and coming, and they said, you know, these are kind of our star performers in about 5 or 10 years. But we want to look after them. We want them to be happy. We don't want to get efficiency out of them. We really want to be happy people, because, you know, we know there's a long-term relationship. Happy employees stay longer and do better than unhappy families, unhappy employees. Yeah, so that's why they come in. They give motivation talks. They look after these people, kind of, you know, emotional life. Yeah, and then more and more, you know, the banks and the large companies are paying more attention to the mental world of the employees now, because they know that, you know, people who are kind of stable, people who are happy, sense of well-being, they can contribute more efficiently to a company, and they last longer. Unsteady people, people who've got issues, a huge ego, hard to work with, generally don't last a lot, because it's just difficult to work with these people, and then nothing gets done. They have to do everything themselves. And these days, you know, things are very competitive. Things move quickly. One person can't do everything. Not like in the old days, you know, the kind of the crazy genius or the eccentric genius in a lab or in a company to do anymore. There's so much thing, you know, to come up with a product, you have to kind of cooperate through marketing, production, engineering, finance. No one person has all this capability under their, you know, inside themselves. And that needs a lot of cooperation. And these days, you're not working in local company. These companies spread all over the world. How can one person do all that by themselves without kind of learning to cooperate with other? So actually, I was reading the same book with Google. There's a lot of cooperation. So there's a lot of a premium on people who know how to work in a group, how to be, you know, kind of harmonious, how to, you know, kind of give and take, how to offer feedback without being overbearing. Yeah. So it's you know, like I said, it's always kind of this ability to kind of change. Sometimes you have to take the leadership. Sometimes you have to step back. If there's, you know, there's something else happening that you don't know. Yeah. So that takes a clear mind. It takes a mind that's rested to, you know, to know where, you know, when to push and when to step back. And life changes. Situation changes all the time. Not just in work, but, you know, in your own life, your family life, your own energy, your own mental health. Yeah. So, and that's why, you know, things are constantly flux. So that takes a certain clarity to kind of balance these out. Yeah, your family life, your social life, your mental life, your own sense of well-being, you know, how much time you give to yourself, how much time you give to your spouse, your kids, how much time you give to work. And those are, yeah, big issues that all of you have to face, you know, very soon or in the future. And going forward, the only thing that keeps you kind of happy or sane is a sense of balance, you know, having a clear mind. So that's why just a few minutes of meditation a day brings that clarity. Yeah, and you can continue. And as you continue on a day-to-day basis, you know, that increases it. Yeah. Does that help? Okay. Sorry. Yes?
I want to maybe to find a better way to about my motto. Let's say that I'm not a patient person. Mm-hmm. I'm not a patient. But I'm upset myself. Okay. I learn about the Buddha teaching. But I also read about article. If you suppress your anger,
that's right,
it will become back into you too.
That's right.
It will destroy you or inside. So I make a in the middle way. So I choose if I can suppress my anger, I will suppress it. But if not, I will show them what is my feeling.
Yeah.
So until right now, good for me that I'm not really go wild with my feeling, because I saw the video about how people in the world go crazy because the situation. So, do you think it is good for me to express my feeling for the moment, but after that I will accept what's the consequence in the accepted what I did? Is it good, or any other better ways to?
No, it's a good question. I think we all deal with our anger issues differently. Depends on where you are. Depends on the kind of, you know, personalities you have. Some people are what they call passive aggressive. They hold everything in, but then they, you know, it starts to come out in different ways, in sarcasm or meanness later, or whatever. But I think the Buddha teach, it's not always about suppressing, because that's certainly not healthy. But it's always not always giving in to your anger either. There is the middle way of being with your, you know, acknowledging you're angry. But you don't just because you're angry, you don't have to act out. But you don't suppress it. Anger has a certain taste, a certain feeling in the body. So one way to work with that is just feel the anger in your body. Knowing your anger, know what that feels like. This is what anger feels like. That's what anger feels like. And then watch the mind. You go to the body, you try to relax the body because there's a tension when anger rises. Then pretty soon you'll find that you're not thinking about the thing that's making you angry, that you're less angry. But sometimes when someone did something annoying, you start to think about all the terrible things I've done to you in the last week and last month and last year. And you become more angry. Yeah, so a lot of times it's not always what people do to you, but how you relate to it. So the main thing is, you know, watch your mind. Yeah. First is to acknowledge, accept that you're angry. That's fine. Kind of breathe. Keep breathing. Work with the angry emotion that comes up in the body. But then, you know, have clarity. Like you say, sometimes you get angry, you yell at somebody else. Does that produce good results? Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you get too angry, you start throwing things, breaking things, and you realize, okay, maybe I shouldn't do that in the future. So, you know, reflection afterward. Did that produce a positive effect or not? So generally, you know, as a monastic, as a Buddhist, we're asked just to reflect, use wisdom around different issues that arise in your mind. You know, and then there's a balanced way. Sometimes, yeah, you give them feedback. Sometimes you say, well, I'm too angry. I'm not going to talk. I'm going to calm myself down first, and then I'm going to address what it is that made you so angry to begin with. Sometimes when you calm down, you're like, well, it's just a little thing. Not a big thing. I kind of blow up in out of proportion. Sometimes when you know the mind is low energy, you get set up very quickly. So sometimes it's on your reaction. Other times you see, well, no, this person, you know, should be kind of told that it's inappropriate to say or do these things. Yeah, but when you're more calm, you can see more clearly that where that, you know, are you being hypersensitive, or did this situation really warranted a response some kind? That this person, if they're not kind of you know, get some reflection, get some feedback, they're going to continue to do unwholesome, hurt other people, say mean things over and over again. Yeah? So generally the recommendation is, you know, to acknowledge what happened, to work with the anger in your body first, and calm that down. And then when you're more calm, try to address it. Say, okay, now what should I do? Now that I'm calm, wait 5 minutes first before you react and see what happens. Maybe, and sometimes, you know, sometimes maybe you are more passive, aggressive type, that you hold it all in, and then it comes out later. Then you say, okay, maybe that's my intention. I want to avoid, you know, confrontation, overt confrontation, because it's not my, you know, you don't feel comfortable addressing this issue with other people, but you still feel anger about it. Then when you're more calm, you say, okay, well, you know, I'm more calm, maybe I should talk to this person. Maybe it's not comfortable for both of us, but maybe it's something that I need to work with. Bringing up unpleasant, you know, kind of situation up. Yeah, so my recommendation, yeah, you know, kind of calm yourself down first by working through it, not suppressing anger, not saying, oh, I'm not angry. No, I'm angry. I'm angry, this is why I'm why. But then instead of just feeding the anger by, you know, thinking about more things, annoying things, wrong things that this person did or situation caused you, you try to calm the body down first. Yeah. Do deep breathing, go walk in the park, sit quietly, and then after 5, 10, 15 minutes, and then see, okay, now what should I do? Just ask yourself, okay, now what's the right thing to do? Should I need to wait to address it, or should I go back to the office and say, oh, you know, what happened was not really right. I feel angry because this is what happened. What do you think? Also give the other person the benefit of the doubt. Maybe, you know, it's not what it looks like. Yeah. Yeah, because I'm not reacting out of anger. Yeah, sometimes, you know, some in the world, they think it's only two choices. Either suppress it or lash out. Not always. There's kind of the middle way of working through the anger and then waiting the mind calm down first and then dealing with the situation, wherever that may be. Whether that's addressing, whether it's just letting go, it's just, you know, okay, they had a bad day, they're going through a divorce or whatever, and the mother just died. Never mind, you know, it wasn't nice things to say, but he probably didn't mean it. Or this person says this to every single person that morning because they had a bad morning. Never mind, don't take it personal. Yeah, you see more clearly.